Well, if I wasn't awake before, I guess I am now.
Good morning.
Wow.
These remote broadcasts always go so well.
That'll make you change your clock.
My clock just went ahead 2 hours. After that.
Wow.
Hey, welcome into our special live broadcast from the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb, live at Presidential Towers. Let's hear it from our live audience here with us today.
Woo!
That's pathetic. That is pathetic.
It sounds like Earth, Wind, and Fire are in this room.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Right. Well, the room that we're in is so small, there would actually only be room for Earth and Wind.
Not a cast of thousands, that's for
there
sure.
There would be no room for fire in here with us today. But we're happy to have our exciting live broadcast location.
The king of sarcasm.
Andy Mazur is here doing sports today.
I'm here. Found it okay. I got over here with Schwani.
You carpooled?
Driving through the streets was nice. You know, I got into his car and I had to ask him a question because the seat was almost in the back seat, the front seat.
Oh.
I asked him if he was, driving around Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
What's up with that, Schwani? Why'd you have your seat so far back?
Well, actually, it was because my dad has an easier time getting in and out of it.
Oh,
and then I felt bad for asking.
Yeah, how do you make a joke now?
I was going to give him
we
some
moved
grief.
The seat back because he's using a walking stick to get around a little bit.
Right. A bucket of water
easier for him to get in.
Oh, that's nice. You're a good son.
I try.
You are a good son. Dave Schwann is here live doing sports, but not traffic.
Dave Schwann is doing sports?
No, he's doing. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Oh, I meant news.
Can we
are we busy taking breakfast orders right now?
Yeah,
we're doing parking orders.
Do you want sausage with egg or?
Think this is something we might be able to do during a commercial break?
It's only a four-hour show.
Yeah, guess not. Wow. And Elton Jim Toronto is...
Dean. You always invite me to these...
These remote broadcasts.
Yeah,
fun when you're...
Yeah, and always these luxury ones, these fun ones. The ones with all the perks.
This is nice.
Yeah, you get to look at a bunch of sweaty people in spandex for 4 hours.
Well, that's what we used to do when you used to do...
I was captain.
When you used to do the climb, part of the WGN radio team, which you were kicked off of.
Right, yeah, well,
Jim was,
that among other things.
Jim was impeached. There was a... There was a whole collusion. I don't know what it was. He was colluding with somebody from Berwyn or something.
Yeah, some Russians found me a back way.
I don't know.
To
the top of the building.
There was a secret elevator that no one knew about.
Right. Yeah. Jim used to do it, and then he would stop into the show afterwards.
Yeah.
And I have never seen a sweatier person in my life. It was disgusting, right?
And I used to like to come to the studio. Remember, sometimes I would do it remotely.
Yeah.
And we would... go back and forth. But then I thought it would be fun to come back to the station and let you not only...
And you were still sweaty.
Yeah, sweaty and smelly, which
still
was nice.
Sweaty and smelly.
Yeah.
And then he thought, I'll put some cologne on. So now I got
Don't
sweaty,
we all do that?
Sweaty, smelly, and a layer of cologne on top of that whole sandwich.
That was always a nice Sunday morning wake up.
Oh, that was disgusting.
That's better than cinnamon rolls.
Yeah, sure it is.
Nothing's better than cinnamon rolls. So anyway, here we are. I don't know how many years. This has got to be 10 years, I'll bet, right?
I did it 10. The first time I did it was in 2009.
Yeah, so it's been about that we've been here doing this broadcast. And we'll talk with folks from the American Lung Association to talk about the event and what it's all about and where all this money goes to. There, as always, lots and lots of people who are climbing 1, 2, 3, or 4 of the presidential towers here in downtown Chicago at Jefferson and Madison in downtown Chicago. So we'll check in with some of them. We've got some special guests lined up for us today. And also on the program today, we're going to remember a great part of Chicago TV history that we lost this week. Marshall Brodeen, who played the wacky wizard Wizzo. That's Morse code.
No, that's what he used to do with the Stone of Zanzibar.
He didn't do Morse code.
Well.
Like you're doing. He would go doody doody do. Doody 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 do. Doody do.
I was saying goodbye, Marshall, in Morse code.
Oh, that's a lovely tribute on your part, I guess.
See, there's like 7 people right now are laughing.
Right. There was still no Morse code.
They got it.
Marshall Brodeen, who has been suffering with Alzheimer's disease for about a decade and a half, is when symptoms first showed up, passed away and succumbed to with complications of Alzheimer's disease this past early Friday morning. And he was 84 years old. God bless him, and the wonderful memories that he has left with us here in Chicago as Wizzo, as a Chicago area magician and entertainer, is boundless. I guess my final sit down interview with him was a couple of years ago at his home in Geneva. That's where he lived until he was put into memory care 5 years ago. So I guess it was 2012, actually, that I did the interview, because it was before he went into memory care.
Yeah, because he seemed sharp on that. I mean, he was still...
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. There were early signs that Alzheimer's symptoms were showing up, but as is the case with Alzheimer's, the disease progressed, and he needed to be put into memory care. And that's where he passed away this past Wednesday morning. So we're going to share some of that interview with you this morning as we remember Marshall Brodeen. We will talk.
It's easy when you know the secret.
Well, that was one of his, maybe his greater legacy nationwide were those TV magic cards that he sold.
I brought my deck of 50 aces. When I got those, you had those, right?
Sure, yeah. Of course.
Remember when you opened the deck and there was 50 aces?
It looked like that's
I'm like,
what it was.
Well, how could we not?
Yeah.
This is no trick.
It's easy when you know the secrets. he sold millions of those decks of
Did
cards.
Did he really? Was that really successful?
And TV and TV magic
show.
Sets.
Yeah, the TV magic show.
That he sold. And
the rope trick.
He manufactured magic sets for other magicians as well. That was really his bread.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That was really his bread and butter.
Nice.
So, he was quite the entrepreneur. And in his home in Geneva had this fantastic, you would love this because it was just filled with memorabilia.
Oh, I saw your tribute
souvenirs.
On TV. The walls were, everywhere.
Photographs of his career and memorabilia things that he had collected through the years.
Did he leave that to you? Do you get that now?
I don't believe I do. I don't believe I have any right to that. But he...
Hopefully someone cool gets that stuff, though, that appreciates
well,
it. No, don't you think? I mean, that's an amazing collection.
Are you the guy that when somebody passes away wondered, what did I get?
Well, no, but that's an amazing, like, to your
Maybe
point.
Maybe we should have a memorial service or a funeral first before we think about that. Wow.
I'm just looking at the stuff.
What do I get? Is there anything I can get?
Well, no, because you'd hate to have that go just be boarded or, packed up and
I'm sure his family.
Thrown out. That's an amazing collection.
The appropriate.
As a collector, I do focus on that because I see that stuff and go, please let that stuff go to someone or somewhere where it is appreciated. That's
okay.
All
right. Well,
wow, Dean. Just because the music was loud at the beginning, you don't have to take it out on me.
Well, let's have a memorial funeral first, and then we can discuss the artifacts and what you might be able to get and put on eBay. Anyway, we're going to also talk this morning with a couple of Marshall's co-workers, Joey Dioria, who played Bozo himself for 17 years on WGN, and Andy Matran, who was Professor Andy, who provided the music on WGN's Bozo show in its later years. Both will join us later on and remember their friend Marshall Brodeen. So all of that will be coming up and more. We are live at Presidential Towers this morning for the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb. It's 9:20 on 720 WGN. Sunday morning, WGN live from the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb at Presidential Towers this morning. I heard a phrase this morning. I stopped to get some coffee this morning, and some people were at the Dunkin' Donuts place.
Ding, ding.
I was waiting for the coffee, and I heard somebody use the phrase, where Jesus lost his sandals.
Yes, I've heard that. I don't understand what that means.
Which is...
It's far, I think.
I get it. It means far, but...
Yeah, I don't know why.
What? It's such a curious. It's been it's been bugging me all morning long.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, where did he leave them? I mean,
why would Jesus leave his sandals anywhere?
And didn't he not even wear sandals because he was washing everybody's feet? Remember that whole story? Remember he took his shoes off and washed people's feet? I don't even think he wore them.
I don't think you need to take your sandals off in order to wash someone else.
No, but then he let the other people wash his feet.
And by the way, if you stop by the broadcast this morning, Jim Toronto will be...
Yeah, I'll let my hooves out.
If you stop out, he will wash your feet.
Should be fun after people are walking climbing stairs.
Yeah, but I've heard people use that phrase and never really understood it.
It just drives me so weird.
Where Jesus left his sandals.
Yeah.
So that means like because it was like in Egypt or in Jerusalem, it was far from here?
I guess so. It's just like, you know, as there are so many other phrases.
Or did he leave them in heaven when he went to heaven? When he rose?
Wow.
That's even farther.
That is philosophical.
It's getting deep.
A lot of you will not need to go to church this morning.
Well, it's Sunday.
I feel like we've covered...
I'd like to get my...
This is our version of the sermon this morning.
It's my That's my letter to the Ephesians.
All I can think about this morning is that. I've been obsessed with that and worrying about whether or not poor J-Lo and A-Rod will make a go of it.
I think the clock is already ticking on that marriage.
If you haven't heard, Jennifer Lopez and Alex Rodriguez they announced that they were engaged last night. And I wish these crazy kids all the happiness in the world.
You think this is it for J-Lo?
You think
she found her soulmate?
I do.
Okay, good.
They seem very happy when you see them out in public.
Well, of course, any giddy couple that's getting engaged looks happy.
When I used to see her with...
Mark Anthony
or Ben Affleck or...
Oh, that's right. That's when she was Jenny on the Block.
When she was with Ben Affleck?
Yeah, that was the video.
Wasn't it Bennifer?
Bennifer. Yeah. I forgot about the whole Bennifer thing.
I think Jenny on the Block was when she was with Sean Diddy Combs.
Oh, is it? I don't know.
I think
so. Is he right? Okay.
I think
whatever.
So. But I always
like it matters.
It didn't seem like those were forever kind of loves.
Why?
I don't know. He seems completely smitten with her.
Yeah, well.
He looks at her adoringly, and I'm pretty sure that's all she needs in a relationship.
Wow.
They're both older now. They're both, you know, more mature. I like to think it's going to work.
Well, hopefully.
I love love.
You root for love.
Yeah.
Root for love.
I love love.
I love love.
I want it to work for them.
You
could turn that into a song.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely put that on a T-shirt.
Yeah.
A WGN-sponsored T-shirt. Yeah. Dean Richards' I Love Love show.
Friday nights.
WGN.
Yeah. Call in with your love songs requests.
Wow, I didn't know you were such a love-smitten...
Andy, what's your take on this?
Well, you see, Alex Rodriguez, talk about an image... rehabilitation.
No kidding.
This was a guy that was a cheater that was kicked out of baseball basically by admitting to using performance enhancing drugs, and next thing you know the guy's on Shark Tank.
Right?
Do you think that this might, to your point, do you think this could help him actually get some votes to get into the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. It's,
okay.
If Barry Bonds is not getting votes, Clemens isn't getting votes, if Sosa's not getting votes, I can't see where he would.
But won't they want J-Lo to show up at the induction ceremony?
That'd be good, yeah. Especially a hot day there in Cooperstown, New York in July.
Yeah.
Wouldn't.
Be nice.
Jenny on the Cooperstown block. Shawn, you're a great observer of pop culture. What's your take on...
I think it's fine.
Wow. There you go.
Congratulations to the happy couple.
Your Honor, I'd like to retract my question. Let me ask this. Do you even know who Jennifer Lopez is?
I certainly do.
Okay. Name one Jennifer Lopez song.
I know she sings.
I know she sings.
And she's been in movies.
She has. You are correct on both of those accounts.
Yes.
Made to order. What was that?
Well, that's what I mean. I wish these crazy kids, they're older, they're more mature, they're wiser. I think they're going to make a go of it.
I think you're bucking for an invitation to the wedding. It
Wouldn't
sounds
be
to
a
me
a terrible thing.
Not
I
at
mean,
all.
You are really
be the worst wedding in the world to attend.
What do you buy them for a wedding gift?
Salad shooter. That's my go-to gift. That's my go-to gift for all weddings.
I mean, literally, this is the couple that has everything.
Well, it's funny because I saw earlier...
Salad shooter.
That's a good point.
Earlier in the week, I saw that they were saying J-Lo rocks a hot bikini. on, you know, on vacation. So clearly that was the goal. You know, Alex got her on this little vacation,
yeah.
And he was ready to drop pop the question. Yeah,
on her, on I think it's on his Instagram account. They have a close-up of the ring that he gave her.
Oh, is it outrageous?
It's the same size as the city of Oakland. It's gigantic.
It's like a World Series ring.
Well, it has to be. Yeah.
It's like a World Series ring. It's gigantic.
Well, it has to. I mean, come on. What are you going to give her?
J-Lo.
A carrot?
Salad shooter.
You can put a carrot in there.
Yeah. You also put cucumbers
yes,
in there.
Yes, you can.
Shwani, do we have a special far-flung forecast?
Ah,
we have not only a special far-flung forecast, we are going overseas for the far-flung forecast.
Perhaps where Jennifer Lopez was born.
Far-flung forecast. International today.
That's right.
International.
Coming up after we check news, 928, 720 WGN. It's a beautiful day. Sky falls, you feel like it's a beautiful day. 951, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Live from Presidential Towers this morning in the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb. Steve Cochran.
You know, I lived in this building when I first came to Chicago.
Did you really?
Tell you a quick story. I lived here for almost a year, and this is before the family moved to town. And I, the laundry, it was in the bottom level, you know, bottom floor, and I was near the top of one of the towers. And, you know, you get tired. So I thought it would be a better idea if I got in a cab from here, went to Walgreens on Clark, and bought socks instead of doing the laundry doing because the I didn't laundry? Want to wait downstairs. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is lazy.
That's beyond lazy.
That's,
yeah.
That's in the dictionary.
For yes.
Yeah. That is super lazy.
Yes.
I love that. I can't imagine why you're not doing the climb today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have others doing it for me.
His people.
Yeah.
Steve
yeah.
has people. Yeah.
Designated climbers.
People for that. We are happy to have with us here the official spokesperson for the American Lung Association. From American Ninja Warrior, Najee Richardson is here. Welcome. Nice to have you here
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what's your involvement with this? I know from when you were very young that you had issues breathing. Is that what got you involved in the American Lung Association?
Yes. I actually have asthma. I was born with asthma, so I've had it my entire life. But I've been an athlete my entire life as well. And the two usually don't mix very well.
No kidding.
Yeah, they don't mix very well. And there's been a lot of challenges, a lot of fail and error, and, you know, trying to figure out what will work and what doesn't work. And, yeah, that's why I'm here, because this is the first organization that's actually reached out to me and, you know, wanted to work together and told me about their mission. And I really resonated with it. And something I wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, what have been the things that have impressed you most with the work of the American Lung Association?
I think just the way they've been able to advocate for it. And, you know, there's people out here today doing the climb that they don't deal with this issue, and a lot of people are climbing for different reasons, whether it's for a loved one, themselves, or just out here to support a really cool cause. And I think that was the thing that, for me, attracted me most to the organization, was that it was people just willing to come out and support this cause, even if it doesn't affect them directly. They still wanted to do something about
it. Yeah, I know in the years that we've been doing this broadcast and supporting the climb, I've seen what the American Lung Association does in supporting people who have respiratory issues, but also being an advocate for research and
yes.
education. And there actually have been great strides
yes.
in that regard for people who have lung cancer and other respiratory issues through the years.
Absolutely. I think the hardest thing for me growing up was I had no idea what to do. And that's the coolest thing about this organization is that, like you said, you know, advocacy and the research, it gives people tips on how to tackle their issues, on how to look for those signs that they might be having an asthma attack or they might need to do something to switch up, you know, the recovery and the safe zone of where they need to be to recover.
Yeah.
And growing up doing gymnastics, I had no idea how to do any of those things. So it's cool to be able to be with an organization that I learn how I can help people who deal with asthma and other respiratory issues.
Full disclosure, we worked together. I was his coach on the salmon ladder.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, the difference in my salmon ladder is I had a nice cooked salmon.
You had actual
salmon. Yeah, I had actual salmon on the ladder. It's kind of an enticement. No, I'm fascinated by having asthma and to be able to compete at the level you compete
that's
at.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Well, doesn't sometimes activity trigger an attack?
Yes, it does. Over the past 3 seasons, I've had an asthma attack almost every season on American Ninja Warrior at some point. Luckily, it's not on camera. Usually, it's the second that camera cuts, I go over to a corner and I kind of have a little episode. But this season, or this past season, season 10 of the show, was the very first time that people got to see it affect me directly. It was on stage 2 in the national finals. It was an underwater obstacle. And you're already, you know, expending a lot of energy going through the course, and this underwater obstacle is at the very end of the course. This is one of the toughest obstacle courses on the show, and they now we have to hold our breath for a period of time just to get through the obstacle.
Right.
And I had a really bad asthma attack. It was the very first time that this ever affected me on the show, and people got to see that in real time. So that was a really big eye-opener for me, just how dangerous this is. And it was cool to have the Lung Association reach out to me and want to work with
me. Did you have it when you were a little kid?
I did, yeah.
So
I did
then
gymnastics.
Did people tell you not even to get involved in athletics?
Oh, absolutely, all the time.
And so how were you able to do it then?
I just hate being told what I can't do.
My brother.
So I had my doctor say, you know, you probably shouldn't do this. And I said, well, you're wrong. I'm going to figure out a way to combat this. And then I had really, really smart doctors come into my life and show me what I can do, how I can still be an athlete and stay safe at the exact same time. So it was just about, you know, getting that second opinion and also just finding someone that knew what it was I was going through, what I wanted to do, and how they can help me with it as well.
So, you know, with your level of athleticism, if Steve was in American Ninja and if I was in American Ninja, which one of us would die first?
Isn't it?
It's called a dead heat.
They don't call it dead heat for nothing.
We pitched American Ninja and Nearly Dead Warriors, and it's two guys getting out of recliners, and there's a refrigerator. You can see it in the distance, but it's like 50 yards away. And you have to go around things, obstacles.
Right.
Like, oh, you know, that ottoman.
The chip,
furniture.
The can chip, I get by that chips.
Ottoman? Yeah. But, you know, actually, the stuff that people go through in a cardiovascular and lung manner, see how medical terms, when they're climbing these, do they hit a wall like they do in the marathon?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's cool because I always try to describe what asthma is like to someone who doesn't have asthma. And doing this stair climb is actually a really good way of explaining that.
Yeah,
because you go up these floors, and for me, I hit a wall around floor number 20, and that's... That gets to the point where I'm gasping for air, and I'm just trying to find a way to get the air back into my lungs. And that's what it feels like when you're having an asthma attack. You start to panic, and the panic is really what brings it on. You know, you can't get any air in your lungs. You can't, you know, find a way to breathe. And that, I mean, it's appropriate that the name is Fight for Air, the Fight for Air climb.
Because
once
exactly
you hit that,
is, yeah.
Yeah, once you hit that wall, it's about finding a way to get past that wall.
Do you know Eddie has asthma?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I do, yeah. I was born with it to the point where early on, doctors wouldn't call it asthma because insurance companies wouldn't cover it. You had to call it chronic bronchitis.
Huh. Yep.
And that's what it was early on. And you know, I was a cross-country runner, too, so I had medicine that I used to take 30 minutes before a race. And there was one race that didn't go on a schedule. So it was one of those kind of things. We were running a three-mile sprint, basically, at that point. And it was a little bit of a task. I mean, you get done... And, yeah, I mean, you're fighting for air big time.
You two, did you two not hear there was a chess club in school?
Uh-huh. Why would I want to do that?
I guess it's the challenge, Najee, right?
Yes, of absolutely.
Just accomplishing what you've been told you cannot accomplish.
Yes. So many of my friends growing up, they were all athletes. We were everyone that I knew was an athlete. So being very, very young, trying to keep up with them was frustrating. And I think it was just more of I had a chip on my shoulder growing up. I wanted to be just like my friends. I wanted to be just like, you know, my all the people that I admired. So it made me push myself
Harder good for you,
than
man.
Yeah. Most.
I hope you rub it in their faces now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for coming by, and thank you for participating in the climb this year.
Thank you for having me.
It's
this
great
has been
to,
a lot of fun.
Yeah, honored to meet you.
Do you win season 10? You can tell us. We don't tell
you. Unfortunately, not. Season 11 is
spoiler.
Coming up.
Okay.
Season 11 is coming up, and I am looking to win that one.
Well, you better get into new training.
That's
fresh
right.
Salmon.
That's right.
For the salmon better.
Steve and I are available to coach if you need help.
Hey, I might be training later on today, so you guys can come along with me. Maybe we can get on the warm-up.
Wax on.
I'm busy.
Today's not great. Yeah, today's not great.
I was going to take a nap after
the show. You're the kind of guy who probably does this every day. I mean, okay, that's a little excessive. Yeah,
show off.
I mean, twice a week seems like enough to me.
Now, G. Richardson, if you want to get more info, by the way, it's lungassociation.org. A quick break, and we'll update news next. WGN.
From the Presidential Towers in Chicago, Dean Richards is live at the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yes, indeed. And we are here till 1 o'clock today at the corner of Jefferson and Madison as the climbers ascend the four towers of Presidential Towers. I guess you can do as many towers as you can, I suppose.
You can do one, two, three, or all four?
A lot of people are doing all four to raise money for the American Lung Association, which is fantastic. We've got a full big show here planned this morning. But also this morning, we wanted to pay tribute to a dear Chicagoan that we lost this week, the great Marshall Brodeen, who played Wizzo, the wacky wizard Wizzo, on Bozo Circus and the Bozo Show, passed away this past Friday morning. Complications of Alzheimer's. Lived with Alzheimer's disease for over a decade and passed away. And boy, what a legacy that he left us with not only his work on the Bozo Show as Wizzo, but as a magician here in the Chicago area, as a hypnotist. You know, he started off as a teenager doing magic in nightclubs, at private parties, at county fairs, any place where he could do magic. He loved magic. It defined his life.
It's easy when you know the secret.
He developed the great TV magic cards that we probably all had, a deck of. On top of all that, just the best guy, most wonderful, sweet guy that there possibly could be. He started off doing appearances on the Bozo Show in 1962 and then gradually became the Wizzo character on the show and was that character from 1968 until he left the show in 1994. Part of that time overlapped with when Professor Andy Mitran, took over as the musical director of the Bozo Show from 1987 until the show went off the air in 2001. And Andy Mitran joins us on the phone line right now. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Dean. It's great to be with you.
How are you feeling, first of all? Andy has had the flu this week, and are you back amongst the
I'm on the mend, Dean. Thank you so much for asking. It's very sweet.
What are your best memories of Marshall? I know that you and your wife, Louise, we're very close with Marshall off camera and his amazing, very dedicated wife, Mary. What are your best memories?
Oh, gosh. There's, the thing about Marsh was that he always paid very close attention to everyone he was with. He always wanted them to feel entertained and happy. And just a couple examples. There was years ago, I had done some music for the Chicago White Sox. And as part of my deal, they gave me a skybox so that I could bring some family, friends, and clients and entertain and do some marketing. And I invited Marshall. And he didn't know anybody in the box. And he had them all in the palm of his hand by the third inning, and I don't think they watched the ball game. He was making himself levitate, and he made some woman's wedding ring appear in his keychain, and it was like, and they were just wrapped. But that's how he was. I was at lunch with Marshall one time, and he was telling me how important it was to have some tricks so that you could keep people happy. And he was trying to teach me this trick he had with this. He would take, $6 bills, and then he'd turn it over, and then it would be six $20 bills. And, he would go back and forth. And he was telling me how to do it. You got to glue these things. And, and it just, he wanted me to be able to share the same kind of gifts he had. another time, I remember our longtime producer on the show, Al Hall, had been in one of several bike accidents he'd had over the time I'd known him. And he was in the hospital and he was recovering, and Marshall and I went up to see him. And Same story. We visited Al for about 5 minutes, and then the nurse came in, and he did, like, some magic trick for her, and then she brought two other nurses in, and before you knew it, the floor was in Al, the whole floor was in Al's room, and he was, you know, just, he was just having them eat out of the palm of his hand, and because he made them happy, and that's what made him happy.
That's really what made him happy. He enjoyed nothing more than to see a smile on your face or to make you laugh. Andy, how many times did he show you a picture in his wallet of his pride and joy?
Oh, he gave me a couple. I still have them. Yeah,
he had that card.
He would, yeah, he would say, oh, hey, Dean, ooh, did I show you a picture of my pride and joy? And you think it's going to be his grandkids or something. And he takes a picture out of his wallet that he always carried with him. It was a bottle of Joy liquid detergent and Pride furniture oil. Just to get a laugh from you, just to get, you know, a groan from you, and it always worked.
I like how Andy calls him Marsh. How cool is that?
Marsh.
Me and Marsh. Yeah. Me and Marsh.
Well, you know, it's your co-workers.
Yeah.
Your co-workers.
Go ahead,
Andy. Talk to me a little bit about when you joined the show, because, you know, at the point that you joined in 1987, he had been doing the show for almost 20 years, more than 20 years in some cases. You're the new kid coming in. How were you received?
Well, when you had mentioned earlier, he started on the show in 1962, and that was the year I was born.
Wow.
So I had grown up watching him, and there was a lot of when I got the job to do music on the Bozo show, I got hired kind of last minute, even though I had auditioned months before, and I was kind of altered, preparing kind of through a sleepless weekend to get ready to start production on Monday, and I was setting up for a rehearsal, camera rehearsal, and I hear these voices, and I look up, and it's Cookie and Wizzo standing in front of me, and I was 5 years old again. But it did take them a little while to warm up to me, and I can understand it, because there had been a band, a very big band on the Bozo show at the beginning. There was a 13-piece orchestra under Bob Trendler, and over the years, the band winnowed down to three members, accordion player, a trumpet player, and a drummer. And the accordion player, Don Orlando, had just passed away the year before I was brought on, and the station wanted to go a different direction and do something more modern. And so I auditioned and came in, and they felt like, you know, that their friends lost a great job, which it was a great job. But there were only two of them left, though, and honestly, there isn't a lot you could do with a trumpet player and a drummer. So they were a little cool at first, but it really changed, and they became very, very dear friends.
Tell me a little bit about Marshall, the man, the off camera, the person himself, because I feel very fortunate, I think very similar to you, of growing up watching the show. And then not being a part of it as you were, but to be able to become friends with Bob Bell and Ray Rayner and Don Sandberg and Roy Brown, to actually get to know these guys, not as performers, on their on-air personas, but just as guys. I feel very fortunate to know what wonderful men they were and family men.
Absolutely. Marshall always talked about his family and loved them very, very much, and but he also loved just mixing it up with other people. I mean, he'd say, I have deals, and it's because he just loved to get involved with other people and see if he could build something together with them or make a deal or do something. And as many people may or may not know, he was quite an entrepreneur, and he had great success selling TV magic cards first in the 60s, and then it went on, and he was very successful with that, and he became very successful, and it went into real estate, and became a wealthy man. And but he always used to say, you know, I don't care, I just need enough money to pay my bills. And there was a humility there that I always admired.
Yep, absolutely.
And he was one of the people, he enjoyed his life.
He sure did. He enjoyed every second, and that's, you know, part of the tragedy of Alzheimer's disease. With anybody of Alzheimer's disease, somebody who is so full of life and so wonderful that being robbed of their personalities while, you know, this disease is so cruel that it takes the person's personality away from them, not only for the person who has the disease itself, but for the family members who are, you know, watching their loved ones fade away like that.
It's devastating. And I had a grandmother who died of Alzheimer's, being about 15 years in, and it was just a very hard, terrible thing. My mother suffered with it, and we all did. And I know that Mary Brodeen had you know, just taking great care of him, and I just can't imagine what she's gone through.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Andy, we appreciate you joining us to remember your old pal, Marshall Brodeen.
Anytime, Dean. Really, what a great... He would always say, you know, about other people, you know, oh, he's one of the all-time great guys.
Right.
And Marshall right. was one of the all-time great
Truly.
Guys.
Truly.
Can I ask Andy real quick what years he went to St. Pat's High School?
That's what I was going to say. That
we're both Shamrocks, Andy.
Are we?
Well, yeah.
Well, I graduated in 80.
I graduated in 82, so we were in the halls of St. Pat's at the same time.
We most certainly were.
Very cool.
Wow, try to hold your enthusiasm down a little bit.
Yes.
Here's the thought bubble in Andy's head right now.
First of all, A, who's talking to me?
Right.
And B, who cares?
That's first. And now, who am I a co-Shamrock with?
Yeah, my name is Jim Toronto. And
Jim.
Yeah, and we were Shamrocks together. I graduated in 82.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Now, you graduated before I was voted most popular student in 1982, so that's probably one reason why you don't remember me.
I was best dressed. So there.
We all have our claims to fame.
Well, this has been a beautiful reunion between you two.
Wow, that was scary. Sorry, Andy.
Andy, thanks so much thanks for joining us. Continue
right,
to feel
please.
Better from the flu. Andy Matran, Professor Andy. A quick break, and we'll check in with meteorologist Mike Hammernick coming up next, WGN.
Dean's live at the Presidential Towers for the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb on 720 WGN.
As we continue with our Week in Theater segment, and a really interesting show is about to open here in the Chicago area. In fact, make its U.S. premiere here in the Chicago area over at the Apollo Theater on Lincoln Avenue, a show called Djembe, which is a new interactive experience. And I'm going to introduce Doug Manuel, who is the creator of the show, to explain what this is. Welcome, first of all. Nice to have you here with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Dean.
So what is Djembe?
But Djembe is an all-new interactive show that we've had big success with in Europe, where everyone gets an African djembe drum. And we tell the story of the history of pop music that basically started with the rhythms of the djembe in West Africa, and we follow that story up through the Americas, across the sea, up through the Americas.
That's cool.
And during the show, we get everyone to play along to music like Scott Joplin, to
Steve,
Prince.
I know you're a big Scott Joplin fan.
I was the first guy to adapt Joplin to hip-hop.
The Sting version, version of the Sting.
Ice Joplin.
Yeah. What are some of the other...
You should be in the cast.
Right?
I think so.
Come on. What are some of the other ones?
That's what
you haven't heard him play drums yet, though. So.
Oh,
talk to me a little bit more about what else we see on the show.
Well, it's a combination of education, so you get to learn to play the traditional rhythms of the djembe, and then you.
What
get
are
to,
the traditional rhythms? You have a drum in front of you right now.
Should we play something for you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
new theme song for Steve
Cochran's show. How about that? That's tremendous.
I'm hearing something new at 6 a.m. every weekday morning.
And that's Sunday morning half speed. Imagine how good they are at the show.
That's right. That's right. This is just waking up time.
That's tremendous.
So how difficult is it? Now, you know, you brought drums for all of us to join you in this. How difficult is it to learn this?
Well, the African master drummers, they start when they're very, very young. And, of course, they hear the rhythms all the time. So I think rhythm is infinite. There's always something else that we can learn. There's always something else that we can do. But it's a lifetime journey to play. But what we do in the theater is really some very, very simple rhythms.
Let me introduce Ben Hope, who stars in the show. Ben, talk to me a little bit about your role in the show and what it is that you do.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm kind of the conduit between the drumming and the audience. So
you're the white guy.
That's right. I mean, it's true. And it's a real pleasure. I mean, I'm surrounded by so much talent. I've always actually kind of thought that, you know, like at the Olympics, they should have just a normal guy get out first to do everything so that you know just how complicated and complex and difficult the things are. And that's what I do in the show is I give you a little bit of a relationship between the drum and the audience. And so I'm not quite the master that folks like Seku and Doug are here, but I'm learning, and I'm learning along with the audience.
So you're sort of our narrator through this journey.
That's right. You could say it that way, yeah.
Yeah.
Or a host, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Either way. Seku is also also here with us this morning on the drums. Explain your role in the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. My role in the show is to be able to pretty much be able to do djembe 1 and djembe 2 because they're different positions in the show. We have a couple of djembe players. As like Ben was saying, he's pretty much like the host of it, and then we have another master drummer who plays. So I'm able to be able to do both whenever there's times needed.
Yeah.
All drummers have one name. There's Ringo. He's only got one name.
Yeah. Seku.
Seku.
Seku. when you came in, they told me that you were with the Muntu Dance Company. Is that right?
Yes, I'm the executive director for Muntu Dance Theater.
This is one of the I used to host the Dance for Life benefit.
Oh, did you?
For years, for 20 years, and traditionally they would open the show.
Oh, great!
For many, many years.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, so thank you.
Do you remember me from the show?
I remember. You were one of the most startling dancers.
Well, they did the interactive thing with the audience there, and I was the before dancer. It's like this is what it looks like with no talent and no training.
Yeah. It's a very important function to have somebody who looks like they don't know what they're doing.
It's me.
Yeah. Let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to pass out drums to all of us, and we'll see what kind of... boy, that's got to be fun to listen to at home, I would think.
Yeah, how many nights do you guys go home and go, these people were idiots tonight? With the audience I'm talking about.
Funnily enough, we find a way to get the audience engaged.
There you go. That's the right answer.
That's the correct answer, but the answer would be 7.
And everyone has a sense of rhythm. I mean, everyone's got a heartbeat. So
everyone has rhythm? Just,
we all have a heartbeat, right?
Just follow just your blood pressure.
And then that's involuntary rhythm.
We're carried by the other members of the band on stage. So there's, you know, there's keyboards and guitar, bass guitar, drum kit.
So it's like Linda McCartney. You cover it wherever
their drums are a lot louder than the people in the audience.
Yeah.
Hey, Jude.
And then none of those amazing...
things. Yeah, none of those things are here this morning. So
right.
You're going to hear the raw sound when we come back from the break next on WGN. It's 10:46 on WGN.
It's Lucy, I'm home from the club.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Live from the American Lung Association's Fight for Air, Climate, Presidential Towers, our weekend theater segment. The djembe show is about to open at the Apollo Theater on North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. And I think this morning we may top the time I thought it would be entertaining to have mimes on the show. Because we may have something this morning that is...
nothing quite like radio mimes. It's like radio magic. Oh, it did disappear.
So Steve Cochran is here with us, and Elton Jim Toronto, Dave Schwann, Andy Mazur, and our guest, Doug Manuel, Ben Hope, and Seku from the show Djembe. And they've brought They've given us all drums.
You have the Greek rhythm.
We have.
Oopa!
Yeah. This is very, very sad already.
There aren't too many times when I actually want to walk off of my own show.
I got to tell you right now, Sekou just looked at me and goes, I'm quitting. I'm done.
Right. Haven't we gone through enough, really? So explain, what kind of drums are we using, Doug? You know, kind of bring the audience, our radio audience, up to speed.
Okay, so the drums that we have here are called djembes, and they come from West Africa. And the literal translation of the word djembe, it comes from the Bambara tribe of West Africa. They used to say Anka Jay, Anka Bay. And the literal translation of that actually means everybody gather together. So this show is really about community.
Right.
And
so this should be sort of tribal and communal, this experience that we're having right now, and not just annoying like it's been for the last few minutes.
It's if your audience could see, it's really beautiful because you're all like hugging the djembe like they're your children. But actually what you do is
Do you keep it on the ground?
Say again?
Do you keep it on the ground between your knees? Is that the place to play?
Exactly, yeah. You put them between your knees.
Tessie Arnaz on Lucy always held it.
You put them between your knees. And if you play them flat on the floor, there's no sound, so you need to tip them slightly. So you tip them away from you rather than towards you. Steve, the other way.
Away from you.
Away from you. Yeah. With the top of the drum away from you.
Ah, got it.
There you go. And
starting to get a little personal here.
There's basically two sounds that we make. So the first sound is a bass in the middle, which we can do after four together.
Yeah.
So it'd be one, two, three, four. There you go. Again, after four, one, two, three, four. And then there's a tone sound at the edge. That was remarkably together, by the way. Fantastic. Then
believe me, it was by accident.
Oh,
just like
it was luck.
Rehearsed.
And then there's a tone sound at the edge, which is after four. We'll do the same thing, which is just literally like, here we go. After four, one, two, three, four. After four, four. Four. There we go. So you've got the two sounds now. And
you guys all caught up. You're not
yeah. There's the edge in the middle.
The edge in the middle. Simple as that.
Everybody at home is going, what time is Jane Pauley on?
She's old.
Yeah, she's done.
Yeah, so are we. Got news for you.
So should we try and play a little rhythm here?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah,
one bass in the middle together. Here we go.
That hurt.
One bass in the middle. And then we're going to do three tones at the edge. We go, and then one bass in the middle, and one bass in the middle. And then one bass in the middle, three tones at the edge, one bass in the middle, a bass again. And a bit faster, same thing.
Kids drums.
Yeah. I just want to say how sorry I am to all of our
all of our
listeners. I just want to say I'm sorry.
I'll be honest, this is as well as it's ever gone on this show. And I listen every Sunday.
So of course in the theater
can I interrupt for just one second? Because as I'm listening to this, it also reminds me of something else. Steve, you're a stand-up comedian.
A joke.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is going.
I not right now.
Oh!
The original rim shot. All right. So what, Doug?
How sad is it that I didn't know you were looking for a rim shot?
I was looking for a rim shot. Right.
I thought the look in your eye looked like you caught it immediately. What? Explain further what we should be doing.
Well, it's basically, we play these rhythms, but when we're in a group of like 450 people in the theater and everybody has their own drum, it actually works much better than if we're a small group like this.
Right.
So,
and
very diplomatic.
What if you're not working with a bunch of monkeys here?
Right. Jim, why don't you do the drum solo from Anna Gata DeVita right now? Swanee would know that.
And of course, you get to play along with all different songs, as I said earlier. You know, with Prince and.
Do you guys do professionals? Do you have something from the show or something professional that you could do for us right now?
That sounds good.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like we dropped the drums on the floor.
Sekou just dozed off, so you might want to have him play some anyway.
Sekou just called an Uber. He's trying to get out.
Well, unfortunately, we haven't got our singer with us here today, Rashada Dewan, who's actually from Chicago. But we can play you a little rhythm again if you like.
Yeah, give us a little something.
More
rhythm. Yeah, a little Scott Joplin. One, two, one, two, three.
Hey, for the kids listening at home, how much do your hands hurt in the beginning when you're learning?
Oh, not at all.
Yeah.
Wow, bang.
That's why they say I'm one of the best interviewers in America.
That's a good question. You are the Gail King of WG.
You just have to take your rings off, that's all.
The show is Djembe, and it's at the will be open at the Apollo Theater starting March 19th through June 2nd. 2540 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. And if you want to get some more information on that, you can go to the Apollo Theater's website. Guys, thank you so much for coming in.
And we all get to keep the drums, right? These are free?
Yeah.
Can we try one more thing?
Just as a little treat, yes. Let's go out on a big number.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
Number right now, yes. Yeah. There you go. Perfect. 10:54.
They sweetened it.
Back after a break, WGN. 10:56, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN, live from the Presidential Towers, American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb. Steve, have you met Graham Ambrose?
I have not, but I'm a fan. I'm aware of his work.
He's been on the show before.
Sure.
He's known as the Kid Critic. And came down to watch the broadcast here this morning. Graham, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fantastic. It's great to be back here.
Yeah. Were you really impressed with our drum performance that we just did a few minutes?
Or did it make you sad?
A little bit of both.
Well, we hope to bring out the emotion in people. That was intentional. That was part of our performance.
It's like reviewing a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our drum segment here was like Roma.
Yes. Yeah, because you needed subtitles.
You did. Because nobody understood it otherwise. Graham reviews movies. He sends me reviews just about every week. You send me, just saw Captain Marvel, right?
Yep.
What'd you think of Captain Marvel?
I thought it was good. I didn't think it distinguished itself that much from this renaissance of superhero movies. I don't think it's going to leave a lasting impact like, say, Black Panther. And the thing that shocked me the most is that DC actually did a female-led superhero project before Marvel did, and they had much more time to do it. I'm not calling Marvel sexist in any... Not at all. It's just kind of interesting to me.
Well, you know that Marvel and DC got into a big legal battle about the rights over Captain Marvel, and that may be why the Marvel franchise held off a little bit before they did anything with Captain Marvel.
Just I mean, as you go through
it
life,
in perspective.
Uncle Dean and I could share this with you. It's knowledge of the elderly. Lawyers make everything better.
Yeah, that's
yes,
right.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Lawyers make the world go round. Did you like Brie Larson, though, in the movie?
I loved her as her Captain Marvel. I loved her performance. Yeah. I thought the character was a little bit inconsistent. At one point, she's a stone cold, you know, warrior brainwash. The other time, she's kind of like this Spider-Man-esque wisecracking character.
Yeah. Inconsistent.
Her as both.
Was inconsistent, you think?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. But I love her as both.
Or multifaceted.
Yeah.
Oh, another way to say it.
She's kind of a chameleon.
Yeah, a person can be more than one thing.
Wow, that's
right?
A pro tip. You just gave him a pro tip from your reviewing the skills.
How about the articulation?
I'm telling you, it's tremendous. How old are you?
Of young Mr. Grant.
15.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
My birthday's in a month.
15, my vocabulary is 4 words.
What were those 4 words?
You don't want to know. Just look up George Carlin, you'll find all the words.
Right.
There's three other ones.
What other movies have you seen lately?
My dad and I, since St. Patrick's Day is coming up, we're kind of looking at Irish movies.
No.
My dad and I are of Irish roots, and I'm very proud of it. My sister does Irish dance. We visit our friends on St. Patrick's Day. And have you ever seen a movie called Michael Collins?
Yes.
Liam Neeson and Julia Roberts?
Yeah, that's a great movie.
It is a good movie.
Yeah, I saw it. I thought it was a little bit slow at first, but actually, no, it started off with a tank battle. I don't know why I called it slow at first. It started off with, it's a war. It's a war. War is never slow.
Yeah.
Is that the one where Liam Neeson rescues Julia Roberts by killing everyone in the process?
He has a special,
that was Pretty Woman.
Special set of skills.
I think that kicked off his career of, you know, murdering everyone.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good idea, to check out some Irish-themed movies. You know who I interviewed yesterday? Speaking of that, who I just interviewed, Colin Farrell, yesterday. He's in the new Dumbo movie.
He's Irish.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. He's
it's interesting casting.
He's the father. He doesn't play Dumbo in the movie.
Does he play that little mouse that jumps on?
Does not. He's the father of the two kids who kind of train little Dumbo.
Okay.
But we talked about St. Patrick's Day and all things Irish with our pal Colin Farrell. We're going to share those interviews with you.
Is he a good interview?
He's a very good interview. He used to be the guy that when you interviewed him was smoking cigarettes the entire time. So when you left about a 4-minute interview with him, you smelled like you
smelled like a bar from the 70s.
Like you were in a bar from 1970.
Yeah.
And we used to play a game back at WGN TV called Count the F-Bombs during a Colin Farrell interview,
because he would fly.
Pepper them like crazy. And he's completely turned his life around. He's quit drinking. He's quit using. He was in rehab for quite a while.
Yeah.
I told him at the end of the interview, I can't believe you haven't dropped one F-bomb during the entire interview. And his Irish bro goes, I'm too lazy now.
Well, that's good. I like hearing he's a good guy.
He's a super, really great guy. So has nothing to do with St. Patrick's.
But can I ask him a question? Do you mind? I know you're up against news here.
No, I don't mind at all.
Have you heard the soon-to-be award-winning segment that Dean and I do each day, Moron Entertainment?
I'm interested now.
Okay, it's more. Here's the play. It's more on entertainment done by two morons.
Two morons.
Yeah. Huh? What do you think?
Can a third moron join the group?
You're way too smart for this act.
There's plenty of room. For me, it's inherent that there should be more in morons.
You know, here's the film. We take him on as our protege, and we teach him how to be less intelligent and less lucid.
Yeah. Dumb, dumber, and dumbest.
Right.
Welcome to the club.
As Dad said, we're going now, son. We're leaving.
I know you may have school or something like that in the morning, but every morning between 8 and 8:30 in the morning. WGN Radio, Moron Entertainment.
I'd be honored. You know, we should put him on. Just like I said that Captain Marvel was a chameleon or Brie Larson, I'm kind of a chameleon too. This old smart guy, that's a part of me. I can be pretty stupid. Moronic.
Dad, have you ever been this proud?
Moronic.
Have you ever been this proud? Oh, he's vouching for it.
You have come to the right place, my friend. The kid critic, Graham Ambrose. Nice to see you, my friend. Thank you for coming down.
Oh, it's an honor.
I know you're talking about Marshall Brodine coming up, but I just wanted to say I thought I behaved well on Friday.
You were remarkably reverent.
Right. And I think it should be because
we have made our mark, you and I, doing a slightly less than reverent obituaries.
The obituaries memorials are frankly quite offensive. Yes.
But you were remarkably restrained.
Well, I just want to say,
because you know that he was a friend. He really was a friend of mine.
Yeah, and I said this before, I'll say it again. Condolences on your loss, because I know it mattered.
Yeah, thank you.
And really, for all of Chicago, because I mentioned growing up in upstate New York, we had a guy named Salty Sam in Syracuse, who I found out when I was in my 20s was an alcoholic in a sailor's hat.
Attaboy.
Yeah, so.
Do you guys have a Bozo up there?
No, we got Bozo.
But you didn't have your own boat.
No, we had a Captain Kangaroo and a Salty Sam, and of course a romper room.
Ah.
Salty Sam.
Salty Sam. Well, try to get into a playground with that name now.
In our next hour, my final interview with Marshall Brodine, sit down one-on-one from 2012 with Wizard.
Wow.
That's coming up.
Well, thanks for having me on, man.
Nice to
see you in the morning.
Here this morning. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN. Eleven is the time. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. This morning, remembering a longtime Chicago TV legend that we lost this week. Friday morning, Marshall Brodine, Wizzo the Wacky Wizard, passed away after a long battle with Alzheimer's disease. He was 84 years old, gallantly fought Alzheimer's for over a decade and a half. And succumbed to the ravages of the disease, survived by his wife, Mary, who was remarkable in his care both at home and even after he was put into memory care, so dedicated to taking care of him, as were his children, his stepchildren, his grandchildren, great-grandchild. Arrangements have not been announced yet. Everyone has been asking me about that, if we know anything about wake or memorial service or funeral, and we have not gotten that information yet. As soon as we do, we'll mention it both on TV and radio. They have asked that if anyone wants to make a donation, they can, to the Alzheimer's Association or to the Nursing Care Center, and I'll get all the specific information for you in just a moment of where you can make donations if you want to. But Marshall Brodean was an amazing guy, truly one of Chicago's very own, born and raised here, was a fan of magic his entire life as a teenager, performed magic at clubs, at county fairs, at special events, at corporate events. His magic and hypnosis performances also included working at famous nightclubs of the day, which included the famous Magic Lounge in Cicero, Illinois, where he would perform magic for the gangsters, for the mobsters who would hang out there. And he tells a great story of how he had a tiny little birdcage trick that he did, where he would make the cage disappear in his hands. And he did the trick for one particular mobster who demanded to know where'd that frickin' bird cage go? And he said, it's magic. Oh, yeah, right, it's magic. Right. And the gangster didn't want to hear that. He wanted to know what it was. Pulls a gun out of his pocket, puts the gun to Marshall's head, cocks the gun, and said, "Where is that bird cage?" And Marshall displayed the bird cage for him no time flat. He worked, he owned his own magic lounges in the Chicago area.
Oh, he did? He owned his own? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, wow.
Didn't like being in the business of it.
Right.
He liked performing. He wasn't so crazy about the business end of it.
But he was an entrepreneur.
But he was definitely an entrepreneur with the advent of the TV magic cards, of which millions were sold. Everybody owned those TV magic cards, for which his famous commercial ran on Chicago TV and elsewhere forever.
And I heard your tribute on TV this week. It was Mr. Ned from Bozo who told him to market those cards on TV.
Market these cards, yeah. If you want to make a success of this, you have to do commercials.
How crazy is that?
And he's the one that told him, let's get into the studio, let's record these commercials. And the rest really is TV history, and it was incredibly successful. His marketing of the magic cards and magic sets was phenomenally successful for him. But we remember him as Wizzo. He started appearing on the Bozo show in the early 60s and then started to make occasional appearances as Wizzo in about 1968 and continued to do that until he left the show and retired in 1994. What are your memories of Wizzo?
Well, the Wizzo, I remember it was, it was all of a sudden, who is this guy? Because that was the when you're a little kid, you were so used to watching Bozo, and it had that regular cast, your Cookies and your
Oliver.
And I remember Sandy and Oliver and Mr. Ned. And then suddenly, Wizzo would pop in, as you said, every so often and do a little skit. And then all of a sudden, he was there. Like on a regular basis, and you're like, okay, wait a minute, how is he going to be here all the time? Then pretty soon he just blended right in. Yeah. But my favorite thing was his Stone of Zanzibar when he had that
from Arobia,
and then he would do 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 do, and then
doody doody
doody doody, and then they would all Cookie and Bob Bell especially, which is. They would make sarcastic remarks. Well,
there's a clip that we have in our Bozo Gar and Ray special where he's doing a magic trick, and Marshall Brodean as Wizzo said, "Oh, the stone knows," and Bob Bell just turns to him without missing a beat and goes, "I think you're about half stoned right now."
I mean that was, and then he was an easy breakup.
Yeah,
Wizzo used to break up very easily when they would make fun of those things.
It was part of the fun of the show, is watching the clowns trying to crack each other up. Andy, Shawnee, do you guys have memories? You both grew up watching all of this.
You know, I don't remember him that much from the Bozo Show, but I remember the commercials for the Magic cards.
Wow.
And knowing that I really wanted a set but never got one. But that's kind of where I remember from. I think he'd probably been off Bozo by the time I was watching.
Old enough to watch the show, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I have to say, I had the cards, and I had the Magic Show.
You probably still do.
But I couldn't do any of those tricks. Could you do? I mean, when sure. I got the box, I was. I mean, on TV, that thing looked like it was David Copperfield. And then you opened up this box, and it was like a little rope and like a little jug that was supposed to, you know, do disappearing waters. I don't remember.
It's easy once you know the secrets.
I know. I could never. Could you do any of the tricks?
Sure, of course.
I could never do any of those.
I'd like
tricks.
To make you disappear right now.
Wow.
Shawnee, how about you? What are your wizard memories?
I do remember seeing him later on the show. You know, when I was a little kid, it was Bozo, Oliver, and Sandy. And then he came later on, I think, really when I was in high school.
Right.
And, you know, to have fun and relive my childhood, if I came home from college, I'd watch Bozo. And he was on by that time in the 1970s.
Yeah, but it was fun. I mean, you know, part of the fun, Steve Cochran makes fun of me because I'm, you know, so into this. But part of the fun for me as I got older is understanding all the double entendres
that
all the clowns were doing, the jokes that they were doing for themselves and trying to crack each other up.
Trying to break each other up. And they did a very good job of it.
That was the funnest part. The most fun was that he would always, they would get into the middle of it and Cookie would make a comment and then his trick a lot of times would fail.
Right.
Because he was laughing and he couldn't get things out of his...
Right. Wherever someone was supposed to appear or his mustache would fall off. it was always something great. In 2012, we went out to Marshall's house in Geneva. He had a beautiful home in Geneva where his whole basement really was sort of a museum of magic, a tribute to his incredible career. He had photographs with everybody. It was amazing, and we did a piece on him when he was inducted into the Chicago Television Academy's Silver Circle Hall of Fame. And I guess it was my last formal sit-down interview with him. When we come back from the break, we'll share that with you next on WGN. Tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, I'm talking with Danny DeVito one-on-one, all about his new movie Dumbo. And his television show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Always a great conversation with Danny DeVito. That's tomorrow morning on the number one WGN-TV Morning News, weekday mornings from 4 until 10. Today, remembering the late Marshall Brodeen, the wacky wizard Wizzo, and my 2012 interview in which he recalled with me his very early starts in magic and his career here in Chicago.
When I was about 8, 9 years old, and they had a woman magician come and put on a magic show. And I said, that looks great. I got to learn how to do that. And I lived near Clark and Diversey, and there was a shop that sold tricks and jokes and novelties. So I went over there and started buying magic tricks there and started doing magic. And after that, I found there was one downtown on Wabash Avenue, Finer Amusements. Started buying magic there, and then, from then on, that's all I did.
So how did it go from being a hobby and an interest to where you were making money off of it?
Yeah, I started doing shows for $15 or $20, whatever I could get, to birthday parties and stuff like that, and kept doing it, and time went by. And then
What do you remember from working the birthday parties? And like, I mean, even before any huge success, I mean, when you were first starting off, do you remember?
I worked a lot of parties. They were a lot of fun. Sometimes the kids get a little wild, but I handle them pretty good.
Yeah, smack them down with your magic wand.
Yeah, I'd wave the magic wand and they'd go back.
Yeah,
a lot of fun doing that. And then I start doing shows at for adults, like American Legion's places, and any place I could get a job, I'd work.
What would you say was the turning point from being an amateur musician, magician, to professional? Was there one moment that really was kind of a turning point for you, do you think?
Well, I did a show at the Parkway Theater where they had acts up here and there, and they liked what I did, and then some agent by the name of Howard Schultz started booking me when I was about 17, 18 years old. And then when I was about 19 years old, I was working at a magic shop, Chicago Magic Center, across from the Oriental Theater, doing magic, and this Senator Crandall, he called himself, would come in and buy stuff, and he was appearing in Cicero at the Magic Lounge, which is right across the street from all the gambling and stuff like that. And he went out of town to England and came back, and he got a different job, and they kept me there at the Magic Lounge for a couple of years doing magic, and they had slot machines in there and all kinds of stuff, and I just do a show, two shows a night, and then I go around the bar and the tables and do close-up magic, and it was a fun thing.
At what point in that, didn't you go into the service and magic played a part?
Yeah, I was working at the place, service? Yes, I was working at the Beacon Inn in Chicago. It's a small place out south on, I forgot what's Central, I think it is. And I was there for a while, and then I got drafted in the Army. And I started going to basic training, doing magic with the guys and everything. And then we went out on bivouac, you know, where you got to sleep overnight and all that. And I, first day I'm out there, I'm shooting, all of a sudden, car pulls up, and where's the Private Brodeen? And they say, he's over there, and this guy says, put your gun down, you're going with me. I said, what, did I do something wrong? They said, no, we're going in. So they drove me back, and they said, what's going on? They said, General Arnold, the commanding general of 5th Army, is in town. He's been here for 3 days, and they want to entertain him. And the general of the post says, he wants you there to entertain him. I said, no problem. And I went back there and went to the officers' club and did close-up magic, and then I put on a show, and they liked it. So they said, you're not going back. You're going to stay here. And General Arnold says, I want to take this guy to Chicago with me. I got a party Saturday night. You got any planes going out? And they said, we don't have any planes going out there. Well, then he's going tomorrow morning on my plane. And I flew on his plane to Chicago, and picking me up. We don't need you until Saturday, so they drove me to my house. My mother was surprised to see me, and I stayed there until Saturday. Staff car picked me up and went out there and entertained for a big party with the commanding general of the U.S. Continental Army, Command 4-Star General. Did some magic and all that stuff. I went back, and about a couple weeks later, I got a call that 4-Star General asked me to come to where, I forgot where it was, where his office is, you know, and do a show for him, and that was it.
So that's how you spent the rest of your military career?
Military, assigned to a little theater. We'd put on shows and sit around all day and go to the service clubs or go to town to do a show representing the Army. So I was off of all other duties for a year and 6 months or 8 months.
How about that?
That was fun.
So then when you came back from the service, go back into the
circuit?
When
I came back for the service, I lived on North Avenue in Chicago, and across the street was a place called the Boston Club, and they had bands there and everything. So I walked over to the guy, and I said, I'm a magician and hypnotist. How would you like to do that? He said, hey, why don't you come over and do some magic? So they had a stage behind the bar, and I did magic on it, and he liked it, and I hypnotized a few people. He said, how would you like to work here? He's full-time. He said, I'm going to put a whole stage of your own that gets both of the rooms. They had one room for the sit-down people and chairs and stuff, and then a bar. They put a stage in there, and I start doing that there and got the show going real good, packing the place. And all of a sudden, the guy that owned it got in trouble. He lost his license. And I said, oh, man, I'm out of a job. Matt, the guy that owned the building said, I'll give you the place for nothing, and you pay me rent $500 a month. It's your place. So I had to get a license for a liquor's license, and I turned it to the Mystic Club. And I ran that club for about almost 2 years, and doing the magic and the hypnotism and all that stuff, I just got tired of it doing it, and it was just really rough. So I had a friend of mine, I'll buy the club from you. I said, well, I'll let you know. And then all of a sudden, the Cairo Club, where they had all the hypnotists, Dr. Michael, Dean, Dante, they all went to Vegas. He said, I'll bring you to the Cairo Club, which is a club I dreamed about going in there. And I went in there, and I started doing hypnosis only. And I was there for about, I think, 2 years. And then Hugh Hefner came in and saw the show, invited me to a party at his house. And he wanted me to work the Playboy clubs all over the country. And at that time, I was ready to get married to my first wife. And it was hard to go and say, I'm going to go on the road. I said to him, I just got married. He said, will you take your wife with you on the road? And I said, no, I don't want to do that. I mean, how do you do that?
Coming up, Marshall remembers his early days working at the Riverview Amusement Park and starting off at WGN, his famous TV magic cards. More with the late Marshall Brodeen coming up after a quick break. Thank you.
Dean's live at the Presidential Towers for the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb on 720 WGN.
We're here till 1 o'clock today at Madison and Jefferson Presidential Towers for the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb.
I just thought about it. Is it named Presidential Towers because it's at Madison and Jackson, which are two presidents?
Jefferson.
Or Jefferson and Madison.
Yeah.
Are two presidents.
Maybe.
I never thought of that.
Adams is right down the street.
And Adams?
Washington.
I didn't know that.
Clinton. Obama Avenue.
Clinton. Right. Clinton's not too far.
Clinton's, yeah.
Trump Drive is right here.
I saw a big building with his name on it. I assume that's what it was. We're here till 1 o'clock today. We'll be doing a special food show from here today. But right now, remembering the great Marshall Brodeen, who
You sure there wasn't a
I can't believe you don't know this.
I can't. I think it's hilarious how every time I've done it, you have like jumped on
because
that.
It's so iconic.
So it's
duty.
I think you're doing Marvin the Martian, by the way.
It's. I just have an inclination to
all
do
right,
the
duty. Well, you keep practicing.
Doo-dee-doo-doo.
In the other room. remembering. Marshall Brodeen this morning, who played Wizzo the Wacky Wizard, passed away Friday morning, 84 years old, complications of Alzheimer's. In 2012, I sat down with him when he was inducted into the Chicago Television Academy's Silver Circle Hall of Fame. And we talked about his career and his achievements. We know him from his magic career before Bozo. And really, it was when he came onto WGN as himself, as Marshall Brodeen, doing magic. It went so well that he eventually was brought onto the show as the Wizzo character.
Do you know how the did they ask him or did he... You know, say I'd like to come on to be a clown. How did you know the genesis of that?
Well, let's listen to the interview.
Oh, is it in there?
And
good.
Tell the story.
Excellent.
Riverview, I went out there to see a magician called Mickey LeMook in the freak show. So I mind myself.
What was
Mickey LeMook, the magician. So I walked over to the sideshow and I didn't buy a ticket. I says, the manager here? I want to see some. The manager came out. And I was here to see Mickey the Mook, the magician. He disappeared 2 days ago. He says, I'll be back. And he never came back, and his stuff was gone off the stage. And I said, well, I was a magician. I wanted to see him. Here, magician, how old are you? He says, 17 years old. He says, I want to talk to you. He says, you want to be a magician here? I said, yeah, I'd love to. Bring your props out. And I was working in a magic shop downtown, so I got rid of that right away. And he put me on the stage, and I started doing magic, and 20 shows a day. They had the Fire Eater and the Sword Swallower and the Four-Legged Girl and the Monkey Girl and the Alligator Man and all, and Electra, the Human Dynamo, and then my magic act. And after about towards the end, he said, I like the way you talk. You'd be a good talker and you'll make more money stopping people. I said, I love it. So I went out last few weeks out there, and I tie a girl to a cross. If she fails to escape, everyone gets a free ticket to the show. But she's getting ready to do her escape. I give you a pitch on the show. You'll see the monkey girl with long black shaggy hair just like a monkey, covered from the top of her head to the toes of her feet. She's married to Emmett the alligator skin man, covered from the top of his toes with rough, tough corrugated hide, laid out in checks and squares like a crocodile. Skin so rough and tough you couldn't penetrate it with the sharpest knife. Sheds the skin twice a year like the crocodile. Hot days keeps his body moist in cold water. And I go on and on, the swords fall on the fire and all that stuff. And I stay there as a sideshow barker. And at the end of the season, they took the show on the road, and he said, why don't you go on the road? I said, I don't know if I can do that. And I was only 18 years old at that time, I think, because I worked at 2 or 3 years at the Riverview Park, and I went on the road with him at the big state fairs like the Montana State Fair and South Dakota State Fair and Indiana State Fair and that.
And
I got out of that.
Yeah. So did you continue to work at Riverview until they closed?
No. I was there, I think, 3 years. Then I stopped doing that. And I started work on a nightclub on Pulaski Road called the Beacon Inn. And I worked there, and then I got drafted in the Army.
What was your first time on WGN?
I was surprised that I got on there. I see all these magicians going on there. And I'm trying to remember who got me on there. I think it was Don Sandberg. Don Sandberg was the one. He saw me, and he's come on to do this show. And we liked about what I did. I'd worked with the clowns and do tricks. So instead of working it twice a year, I start working it every couple of months. Then I went down to once a month on it for a while. And then I did a trade show for the Bethlehem Steel, I believe it was, and they put me in a Wizzo costume to talk about don't buy foreign products, buy American products. And they start doing this stuff, and they gave me the costume. So I showed it to Don Sandberg. He said, why don't you come on the Showtime, put a mustache on, beard and all that stuff, and come on there. We'll call you something, the magician or the wizard or something. And I went on there with the wizard costume on. For some reason, I went, doody-doody-doo. And he said, oh, I like that doody-doody bit, didn't? And the Stone of Zanzibar. Where'd you get the thing for Zanzibar? One time with Bozo, I touched him. I'm going to touch you with the Stone of Zanzibar. He said, I remember when you got stoned at the Zanzibar. I'll never forget that. It was Bob Bell. And I did magic and all that stuff, and he liked what I did. I got crazy in that. And all of a sudden, he says, how would you like to work it once a week? So I did. And that was it. And then all of a sudden, people would call, when is he coming on again? So then they put me on 3 days a week. I think it was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And as time went by, Sandberg left and that, and they wanted something new, so they hired me full-time as Wizzo.
So 1962 is what you're saying? So 1962 was the first time that you were on WGN.
Right,
you,
exactly.
You were called on to do a magician's act, but you were not Wizzo. At first,
I went on to do a commercial on TV magic cards. I'm Marshall Brodine, the magician. You know, most magic tricks are easy once you know the secret. Now, take TV magic cards. You don't have to be a magician to perform all these amazing tricks. Have someone take out a card, put it back in the deck, tap the deck, it comes to the top. Put it in the middle, it's back on top again. Now, for more fun, you place it on the bottom of the deck, and they all become that card. Cut the deck, and they're all different. Easy. Easy, once you know the secret, and I'd get where they're available, send $2 to Magic Cards, Fox Lake, Illinois. And then all of a sudden, I got a guy that saw it, and he said, you should be in stores all over the world, all over the country.
Yeah.
And he took and started me with a company, and we sold them.
The rest is history on that. Those years of Bob Bell, Roy Brown, you, the band, I mean, those are the heyday.
Bob Bell is the greatest, and Sandy, all of mine were really good.
Yeah.
Oliver. I was only on for a while for them, then they left as the time went by.
What are your best memories of those Bozo days? What was the most fun? What was the most exciting? I mean, what are?
I think doing the Three Bears. I have a copy of the Three Bears. I play Mama Bear, Bozo's Papa Bear, and Cookie's Baby Bear, you know, and we come out of the forest, you know, and Bob Bell turns to me, hey, Ma, why don't you shave from now on when we go in the forest? What are those other bears going to think? He's got a big laugh, you know.
What do you think the magic of Bob Bell was on that show?
I think he was greatest. He was really great. You could never stop him. I mean, whatever line you throw him, he'd cover it. He was really really a good bozo.
How about Roy?
Roy was great too. They were the two of the best that were ever on the show. Roy Brown and him together were the masters.
And Roy not only was your coworker, but you guys were pretty really close friends, right?
Yeah, real close friends. And then when he got divorced, he moved into a building that I had. I had an empty apartment there, and he moved into one of the apartments, and we'd go to work together from there. It was great.
Why do you think that show was the great success that it was for all those years?
Because I think it was different than any show around in the country. And it was a live show direct from Chicago. And it was on cable also, wasn't it? Nationwide. With all the professional acts on, and the skits we did were all well done, well written too. Sandberg was great at writing those spots.
You must still hear from people who grew up watching the show, right?
Once in a while, yeah.
Yeah?
I know people, yeah.
What do they say to you?
I don't know, not too much. They ask me what I'm doing now, and I said I'm still in the magic business.
Does every single person want to see you do Wizzo and get a doody-doody-doo from you?
Yeah, we used to do some personal appearances. Cookie and I, Bob Bell, and Bozo didn't want to do it. So we'd go out and do shopping centers and everything. Made a little extra money on the side. And they let us do it, too, because it's advertising the Bozo show.
Yeah.
Did a lot of shopping centers. And that was fun to do.
What did, in if you look at your whole career, everything, what did Wizzo mean to you?
It was fun. It was fun to do. It was rather being serious and doing hypnosis and nightclubs and stuff like that and magic. Putting on that makeup, you could get crazy and get away with it.
So it allowed you to maybe do things that you wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, oh, really? I don't think I'd go around going doo-dee-doo-dee-doo.
Although he did when I would go to dinner with him if we were out someplace.
Oh, no.
As Andy Matran, Professor Andy from the show, told us earlier in the show, no matter where he went, he had a deck of cards in his pocket, and he did magic tricks for people, and he was always the center of attention, making people laugh and doing tricks for people wherever you go. Those TV magic cards are something that everybody remembers from his commercials. Most everybody had their own deck of the TV magic cards or
definitely
one of his magic sets. He talks about that when we come back next. It's 11:51. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, remembering Marshall Brodeen today on WGN. Are you ready for another season from the theater that won Best Musical 3 years in a row? Starting this fall, Aurora's Paramount Theater opens the season with Disney's Newsies. For the holidays, another Disney favorite, Beauty and the Beast. Next up is the world premiere of the new musical based on the Michael J. Fox movie, The Secret of My Success. And wrapping up the season, the fierce, fun, flashy, Kinky Boots. Pre-order a subscription by March 17th. See all four shows for as little as $72. Visit ParamountAurora.com. It's 11:54 this morning, remembering the late Marshall Brodeen in 2012. We sat down and talked with him about his career. He had already been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. You can hear a little bit of it in the interview. So he has a little bit of trouble recalling some of the details of his long, illustrious career. But remembered with pretty amazing clarity the commercial, verbatim, the commercial that he did in 1970 for TV Magic Cards.
Hi, I'm Marshall Brodeen, a professional magician. You know, most magic tricks are easy once you know the secret. Now take magic cards. You don't have to be a magician to perform all kinds of amazing card tricks because it works by itself. Have someone take a card, place it back in the deck. Tap the deck, it comes to the top. Put it back in the middle, and it's back on top again. Make two or three piles. Whatever pile they point to, the card is there. Now, for more fun, take the top card, tap it, and it changes to their card. Place it on the bottom, and they all change to their card. Cut the deck, and they're all different again. 6 or 60, you can work TV Magic Cards, the mechanical deck that works all by itself.
TV Magic Cards, just $1.98 at Dominic's Finer Foods, Goldblatt's, or wherever you see the sign, and at Walgreen and Walgreen Agency drugstores.
Everybody, literally everybody that I've ever known who's had even the tiniest of interest in magic got started with TV Magic Cards.
And even people that didn't do magic, like you said.
Yeah.
And what happened, I would go out to the state fairs and there would be guys out there selling Svengali, the magic deck. They'd stop a crowd of 50 people and 25 of them would buy it for $2 a piece or $5 a piece. And they says, why couldn't a guy go on TV and hit 1 million people and sell TV magic cards? Nedlack used to represent products. He would do commercials for on the side outside being Nedlack. And I showed him the TV magic cards, and I'd like to put these on TV. He said, you can put them on TV. He was the guy that got me the time and all that. And I said, I'll do them just with the hands showing and all that. And then we did it with the me standing there doing them. But he handled the whole thing. He was the rep for it. He would sell TV time on WGN. He said, I'll tell you what, bring your tuxedo with, and after we do the Bozo show, I'll keep a camera going for you, and you'll come out there, and we'll shoot a commercial. You're going to sell it on TV, right? So I went out there, and hi, I'm Marshall Brodeen, professional magician. You know, most magic tricks are easy. Once you know the secret, then they did the whole pitch on the cards. Cards are simple to do, easy to do. To get these cards, send $2, your name and address, to Magic Cards, Fox Lake, Illinois. And then we did it through mail order. And then some guys that own CLR and Star, all those products, what other products are there?
All these TV pitches.
Pitches, yeah.
He called me up
and he says, he called me up and he says, you got a great product. You ought to be on TV selling them at all the stores. Come out and see us. So I saw him, the Guttermans. That was the name of the people. And how would you like to go nationwide with that? I said, I'd love to. We can get in all the stores because we're in Walgreens, Thrifty in California, New York. We're in Woolworth and Woolworth in Chicago and all that stuff. I said, I would love it. So we made another commercial and they put them all over the country and we sold a million decks of TV Magic cards.
What do people tell you that they remember? Do you get stories of people saying...
You know what I do? When I go to Magic conventions, I always get a couple of guys that come over and say, you know, I started Magic doing your TV Magic cards. And Lance Burton, who's now in Vegas, his mother bought him a deck of TV Magic cards, he told me, and that's how I got started in Magic.
Didn't Copperfield tell you the same thing?
David Copperfield, yeah. He got a deck of TV. He bought a deck of TV Magic cards.
And what did he tell you?
He says, I got bought a deck of TV Magic cards. That's how I got started doing Magic.
How about that?
Isn't that amazing?
How does that make you feel that so many people...
It feels good, yeah. And they were selling like crazy in stores, so everyone got them. A lot of my friends got them. And people I meet all over the country bought them, seeing them on TV. People I didn't even know. When they'd meet me at a Magic convention, they'd say, I bought your Magic cards when you were on TV. That was fun.
Does it make you feel good?
Yeah, it's a good feeling to think they were sold all over the country in California.
Well, I mean, that you started so many people that you got them started in their life.
Yeah, and a lot of magicians out there, young guys especially, or they're young then, that bought the cards.
Remembering Marshall Brodean this morning. Our interview from 2012. After a break and the update for news, Joey DeOria, who played Bozo on WGN-TV, will join us to remember his old friend Marshall Brodean. That's coming up next, WGN. 1210, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Doing the grand march this morning, remembering the great Marshall Brodean, who was on the Bozo Show, Bozo Circus and Bozo Show, 1968 to 94, and passed away this past Friday morning after complications of Alzheimer's. He was 84 years old. There have been no announcements yet regarding a memorial or services. As soon as we hear about that, we'll mention it on both TV and radio. But they are asking that if anyone wanted to make a donation, that they could do that in his name to Arden Courts of Geneva, to Heartland Hospice, or to the Alzheimer's Association. We're remembering Marshall Brodean through his own words in my final interview with him and some clips this morning, and also talking with the people who knew him best. Probably no one more than the man who played Bozo himself from 1984 to the year 2001, Joey DeOria. Joey, I almost called you Bozo there for a second. Going back to the old days. Joey, welcome. Hi. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be with you again, Dean. I wish it was under happier circumstances.
Exactly right. Exactly right. What are your best memories of your old pal Marshall Brodean?
Marshall, I used to say of Marshall, I want to be Marshall Brodean when I grow up. I've never known anyone who enjoyed himself more than Marshall Brodean. He was a terrific guy. He was a tremendous friend to Roy Brown. And when I started with the show in 84, after Bob Bell left the show, they just became, we became the three amigos. We just had a great time together. Marshall had a boat out on Fox Lake, and during the down season, we'd all be out on Fox Lake, running over jokes and ideas, and it was a great way to get to know the guys a lot better. I have to say I really enjoyed working with Marshall and Roy very much. Marshall was just a very happy, cheerful man.
Yeah, and enjoyed making people smile and making people laugh all the time. Andy Matran, Professor Andy, was on with us a little earlier and talked about no matter where you went with Marshall, there would soon be a crowd of people around him as he entertained people with magic tricks and things in a restaurant, no matter where you were with Marshall.
Yes, he was remarkable. And he had so many wild stories. He had a tremendous career. I mean, he started off as a young man working at Riverview Amusement Park as a sideshow barker. And at the drop of the hat, he would literally go through the sideshow spiel for you, which was always amazing. Things like, was it Sarah Sue, the mule-faced girl, the girl with the face and features of a gigantic Georgia mule, not mummified, not made of wax, but born of a human mother like you or me. I mean, he would go through all of those things, and they were just hysterical.
Yeah, it was amazing. Talk to me a little bit about joining the Bozo Show when you did, when Bob Bell retired. You were one of the new kids joining this cast that had worked together for a pretty long time, a couple of decades in some case together. What was it like for you, joining these guys who had their rhythm and who had their chemistry, and along comes this new guy?
Well, I had an advantage. I had some friends out here in California at the time, which was where I was living back then, who had cable and actually had one of the early VCR players. Those were the things that literally had the reels of tape that were like the size of a dictionary, and they would put together some of the shows. And I'd watch Bob Bell and I'd watch Roy. And after watching a few episodes of, I remember watching Bob Bell and Roy, and I was going, okay, I get it. He's Abbott, he's Costello. That's the dynamic there. And then Marshall came on, and I remember thinking to myself, what is that? he was just so completely out of left field that it just stunned me, and even the first day I met him, I wasn't prepared for the level of lunacy that you would get from Marshall Brodeen.
I think that to me that was part of the charm was, this mischievous, anything could go wrong kind of feeling. As you got a little older, you watched the show for different reasons, to watch you guys trying to crack each other up.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, and I don't know if anyone has ever mentioned on the air with you, or if I've mentioned it, is that our scripts, Al Hall used to refer to it as the Chicago School of Television. We did not have a set script. We would have a one-page scenario of pretty much what was going to go on in the storyline. And then we would all pretty much ad-lib what we were going to be doing and saying. And I knew that there were certain setups that I could give Roy that I knew I would get the right response. Marshall, however, was like he was doing a totally different show. Roy and I would be going through the bit, and all of a sudden, Marshall would come in out of left field and talk about something entirely different, and we would just stop and stare at him. And I would look at Roy, and Roy would look at me, and we'd both shrug and go with where Marshall was going for a while.
That was definitely part of the charm. Or when things went wrong, when props didn't work, or a mustache wouldn't stay on when it was supposed to, or something like that with Marshall.
Well, yeah, Marshall hated the spirit gum that he had to use to put on the mustache. And I remember, we'd be in our dressing room, and he would put on the spirit gum, and then he would roar about how much he hated it and how he's going to quit. He doesn't need to do this anymore. And then he'd say, "I'll see you guys next week." he was just a delight to be around. And I remember I used to work for Milt Larson, the man who owned and created the Magic Castle in Hollywood. And I remember I was sitting and I was talking with Milt at the bar, and I said, as a matter of fact, I said, one of the fellows on the show is a member of the castle. And Milt kind of raised an eyebrow, and I said, Marshall Brodeen. Well, the minute I mention Marshall Brodeen's name, another magician sitting at the bar taps me on the shoulder and says, "You know Marshall Brodeen?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Marshall Brodeen is a disgrace to the magic world. He violated the magician's sacred trust by selling a magic trick, the TV magic cards, and made millions. I wish I'd thought of that." And that was pretty much it.
Yeah, but there have been so many stories of magicians who feel like they got their start in magic through Marshall and those TV magic cards and his magic acts, including David Copperfield and Lance Burton and many other names as a result of that. But off camera, outside of the Wizzo persona, how would you describe Marshall?
I would describe him as probably one of the happiest people I've ever known. I've never heard him say a harsh word against anyone. I've never seen him lose his temper. He was always such a pleasant, happy man, and he enjoyed his life immensely. I'm sorry the last few years were not as pleasant for him as they might have been, but all in all, I would say that was a man who led a wonderful and very happy life.
Yeah, that's the bottom line of it all. Alzheimer's is so cruel that it strips a person of their dimension and their essence, but he lived a great life, had a fantastic family, a fantastic career. And Joey, we appreciate you taking a few minutes to remember Marshall Brodeen with us. You're doing well?
Yes. I'm keeping. In fact, my wife and I just got back from Anchorage, Alaska, where we were in a production of The Sound of Music.
Oh.
And we've been working together and having a great time. And of course, I get to go up and visit my grandchildren in San Francisco, which is always a lot of fun.
Very nice. And I know you're very busy in the animated voice world as well.
Yes, I'm currently the voice of Butch the Cat in the new Tom and Jerry series. And I just finished doing a role in a new movie that's coming out. And unfortunately, I cannot say what it is at this time. They put gag orders on everybody.
Oh. Yeah. Joey Dioria in Game of Thrones, the movie.
Yes, exactly. The cartoon, the animated
The cartoon version. Okay. Tom and Jerry go visit Game of Thrones.
Believe it or not, they have actually stolen some plot lines and characters from Game of Thrones and thrown those into some of the Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, not surprised. Joey, look forward to seeing you when we come out to California. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, looking forward to it. Take care.
There it is, the man, Bozo the Clown, for 17 years on WGN, Joey Dioria. When we come back from the break, Southside foods that are our favorites, as we're here in the South Loop this morning on WGN. Tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, we are talking with Danny DeVito one-on-one about his new movie. He's in the remake of Dumbo. We talked about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Had a great conversation with Danny DeVito yesterday in Los Angeles. We'll share that with you tomorrow morning on Chicago's number one WGN-TV Morning News.
Hello, Riga.
Remember that from Taxi?
Oh, from Taxi. I didn't know what that was. It scared me.
It was
just a moment.
Louie.
So the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about how we're going to be here at Presidential Towers for the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb. And this is the exact quote from one Mr. Dave Schwann.
He's busy
last
right now.
Week or the week before. If you don't have rainbow ice cream, I'm not going. Mr. Diva. Making his demand. Schwann, he can't even talk right now.
He's knee-deep in ice cream right now.
Because he's busy eating a rainbow ice cream.
Well, the last time we did this, a couple of years ago, when they did come, you had one of the classic lines.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. But let me introduce Lynn Sapp, who is the owner of one of the most iconic ice cream stores in Chicago, Rainbow Cone, the original Rainbow Cone, which is at 9233 Southwestern Avenue. Anybody who grew up on the South Side, it was the biggest treat in the world to be able to go to Rainbow ice cream, and I'm glad that I've been able to expose it to others here. Jim Toronto has not come up for a breath.
Well, I'll tell you,
during the break, Lynn was nice enough to bring ice cream to everybody.
The ice cream cake.
Jim is devouring the ice cream cake right
now. Well, I was born on the Northwest Side and lived my whole life. I never had this. I never had this.
See,
you are my my rainbow ambassador.
Andy, how you doing down there with your ice cream cone?
I'm really good, thanks.
Lynn, how do you like the cake roll?
Thank you for bringing
it. I love the cake roll. In fact, I have to say, the cone is interesting.
The cone is the greatest.
But I'll tell you, I'm digging this cake.
Yeah, the cake. It's all of the flavors of a rainbow ice cream cone, but wrapped in a cake and then sliced. And it's
you said this is new?
It's an oldie but a goodie.
Oh, it is.
We had stopped serving it for a little bit, and then we started again. So you can get that at Original Rainbow Cone at 9233 Southwestern Avenue.
Explain how the whole thing started. Your grandparents, right?
My grandparents. I'm the third generation. My grandparents started in 1926, so this year is 93 years.
How about that?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes. So 93 years of tradition.
Ago, huh?
They did. Yes.
Is it the same flavors?
Same.
Everything, or is it you modified it through the years?
No, same. Exact same ice cream flavors on the cone, the five, chocolate, strawberry, Palmer House's cherry walnut, pistachio, and then covered in orange sherbet. And so we've had the cone, and when I took over, I had to come up with different ways to use those five flavors. And all my friends were getting married and wedding showers and family, so that's where I started doing cakes. So that's where we came up with the rainbow cakes. And then the cake roll I came up with for a girlfriend's wedding shower. And I had to bring dessert.
Right.
And I didn't want to bring cones, so I made the cake roll.
Yeah.
So you buy this as a thing, and like a slice. Dean and I have a slice in front of us.
Yes.
But it comes as a whole cake.
It comes in a 6-inch or 12-inch. And you can get slices yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I would just like to point out that I haven't touched mine yet. And
I don't
Jim
know
is,
how the hell you are sit there.
Jim is
it's melting.
Is eating.
You better be careful, because if you let it about five more minutes, you won't get any.
You are not coming anywhere near mine. I'll tell you one thing. Unless you want this pen stuck in your hand.
Meanwhile, Schwani mumbling.
Yeah, Schwani. We can't get Schwani to shut up. This is the only time of year that we can actually.
I thought Harry Carey was here.
He's sitting in the corner rocking right now.
Now, see, this is the amazing thing to me, and this is what Jim was referring to. It's interesting to me how people eat their ice cream. Andy is a biter.
I'm biting it, yeah.
Andy is biting chunks of the ice cream. Schwani is a licker.
You're done. You're all done.
Ernie's done.
Ernie, our engineer,
and he's
somehow inhaled.
It's gone.
He's premature. He's a premature liquor. He gets done very quick.
Oh, all right.
It's all done.
All right. That's interesting. That is interesting. But explain what it's like in the summertime. I mean, this is truly some of my fondest memories, is the family getting into the car and... we would get down to Rainbow Ice Cream, and you would wait in line, you'd wait your turn, and when you got inside that store and able to get your ice cream, it was the greatest thing ever. That still goes on, right? It's a tradition.
That's the beauty of the product, is your memories. And for 93 years, you have memories of going with your family, and that still exists today. We have families come in all the time, and that's what it's all about. Have a little ice cream and be together and have memories. And we have the lines. Now technology has sped us up quite often, but... you don't wait as long as you used to.
Yeah.
Same building?
I think part
same
of the,
building.
Part of
same
the fun building. Is waiting in line, though. The
yes.
The anticipation
yes.
of getting in.
You don't have a drive-thru?
No.
No drive-thru?
No.
I've never been there, so I don't know.
No.
It's very interesting to me. I mean, do you still have a downtown spot?
Yes, we're still at Navy Pier.
Okay.
And a kiosk downtown? Yes.
But that's been amazing to me, because I've told you that you should have a place near Wrigley Field. You should have places all over the city. I mean, this is this should be the most franchisable thing in the world, because it is the greatest ice cream ever.
Well, you said that, and we're working on it. So it is. We are in. I'm working on it. And now, when you call Rainbow Cone, you can leave your information if you're interested in a franchise.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So we're working on it. It's in process.
Hey,
so
Schwani,
I
what
heard
do you.
Think? You.
Yeah. Schwani, what do you think?
I'm in.
Dave and Elton's.
Yeah, keep Uncle Dean in mind with that. I'm getting.
So we're not done yet, but we are in process and we're working on it.
It's the greatest. It truly is. So. And today featuring some of our favorite South Side places, because we're not exactly South Side here at Presidential Towers, but more South Side than we usually are. So we're trying to feature some of our favorite South Side treats.
What's here that this yellow morning. One in the middle?
Palmer House. Oh, it's the cherry walnut.
That is my favorite. That is just my favorite.
Good stuff.
Man.
I still love it. I still eat it. And now that we brought the cake rolls back, I have to watch myself.
Even better, yeah.
You know, it's
and the cake is good.
It is good, isn't it?
I mean, it's just usually when you get those cake rolls with the vanilla in them, the cake is there just as a, you know, it's there to look nice. This cake is really good.
This is a
good cake unto itself. It's not just a throwaway to wrap the ice cream.
It is. It's a very good cake.
Schwani has devoured his cone. Schwani,
he's done. He's already licking.
What else you got?
Your ice cream review. What's your review, my friend?
Oh, 6 stars out of 10. It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
You ate the whole cone.
Yeah.
Look at Andy.
I'm almost there.
Andy is very content.
Andy is like me. He's savoring them. He doesn't go too crazy. Yeah.
The beauty of the product and my job is to make sure it stays the same for 93 years, trying to keep it consistent.
Yeah. The thing of it is that the flavors blend so well together.
They do.
It's just perfect.
How is it that
that's Joe Sapp.
It's the original rainbow cone, and they are at 9233 Southwestern. You're open for the season. Opened.
Yes,
a couple of days ago, 9233 Southwestern Avenue. Lynn Sapp is the owner. If you want more info, rainbowcone.com. Lynn, it's always great to see you. Thank you.
Back to our live coverage of the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb on 720 WGN. Here's Dean Richards.
Wow. Is there alcohol in that ice cream?
I think everybody's just giddy on their very, ice cream.
Man, very giddy.
Andy just had an ice cream cone upside down on his head.
Yeah, party hat.
This is
our new look.
Schwani is basking in the glory. He's got a post-rainbow aura going on.
His tongue is rainbow colored
right now. And me?
Why?
It's still wrapped up.
I'm working. I'm doing a radio. It's a pet.
You had all that time during the news.
As you all know, he is very no food in the studio. I do not think it's interesting to listen to people eat on the radio. You guys can enjoy. I'm glad you all.
And I usually subscribe to that, but man, that's really good.
I know. I'll eat it later, but I'm okay right now. Don't you all think about me, don't worry.
I was just trying to be nice because you have the owner of the ice cream shop here. She wants a little, reaction to her product.
A little love.
She's seen me eat rainbow ice cream at her store many times through the years. Another story, because we're featuring my favorite Southside places today. Another one of my favorites is a grocery store that we used to frequent when I lived at 109th and Artesian. Just really around the corner was County Fair Foods, which is 108th and Western Avenue. And it's, to me, much more than a grocery store. Tom Baffus is the owner. Tom, welcome. Nice to have you here with us today.
Hey, Dean. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I don't think we've ever featured a grocery store on this food show in all the years that I've done this show. But it's worth mentioning for a lot of reasons. It's a family-owned operation,
yes,
which you don't find very much anymore, these giant corporations.
They are definitely shrinking in today's climate.
But you've managed to not only survive but thrive with this fantastic grocery store that serves the needs of that community.
We have, and a lot of it is due to the neighborhood because they really care about the small business in Beverly. It's a big deal to them, and they realize that to have a store like that is unique, and it enhances the whole area.
Yeah, it feels very old school when you go there. They've got, everything that you could possibly want and every modern thing, but it reminds you of when you were, younger, and you go to these family grocery stores.
And they used to be all over the city.
I know it.
All over the city.
Yes. That's the kind of feeling that you get when you go to a county fair. The one thing that's in particular for this time of year that I wanted to bring you on for, County Fair sells more corned beef than any one store in Chicago for St. Patrick's Day, right?
We do, more than any other single store. It goes between 10 and 12 tons for the week.
Wow.
Which is 20 to 24,000 pounds of corned beef. And I have to give a shout-out to my Irish imported butcher, Michael Benson, who pretty much lifts all that corned beef out of the barrels the whole week. And he, when he comes home from work, his wife tells him to take his clothes off in the garage and walk in and go right to the shower.
Do you make it on site?
We get it from our supplier, but the difference in our corned beef, my dad, Bill Baffis, came up with this idea as the parade grew in popularity. And he said, you know, we have to capitalize on all these people eating corned beef. We have to make it special. So we get it in barrels. It's not packaged. It's soaking in the rind the whole time. And we pull out the whole brisket, and we cut it right in front of the customer. They want a half a brisket, or some people want 20, 30, 40 pounds of it.
Right. Yeah, for different parties and things that they're putting on. What's a St. Patrick's Day like at County Fair? It's got to be one of your biggest weeks of the year, I would think.
It's right up there with Christmas and Thanksgiving, to tell you the truth, Dean. Yeah. It really is. It's huge. You know, all the residents of Beverly are having their families over, and they're all having parties. It's like the first day of spring. They're all out in their front yards running around. They have their green on, and it's just a lot of fun, and people get really excited for it.
Yeah. What other special St. Patrick's Day things do you have going on? Aside from the corned beef, I mean, I think that's a huge deal to be the number one corned beef store in Chicago.
Corned beef is definitely the number one thing. We also cook our own corned beef and sell it cooked in the deli, which we slice for our customers. Cabbage and red potatoes is always on the menu.
Yeah.
We always want to have the lowest price in cabbage. That's important. But it's just the whole festive look of the whole store, and everybody's in a good mood. They're excited for it. It's been a long winter, and people are ready to get outside.
Right.
Really.
And the parade goes right by the store.
Right in front of the store. We close on parade day. You can't get to the store anyway.
Yeah.
So we close, and everybody, all our employees, they all want to enjoy the day. They all have parties and things to do, so we just let them have at it.
Get to enjoy the store. It's County Fair Foods, 108th and Western. You can't miss it.
Yes.
People want to get more info. You have a website, right?
We do. If I can remember, but I think it's countyfairfood.net.
That sounds about right.
Yes.
We'll double check that.
Okay.
Tom Baffis is the owner. Tom, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Dane.
Today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Happy St. Pat's Day to you. And we'll take a break, and we'll be right back at WGN. 1248, Dean Richards live this morning at the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb at Presidential Towers. Elton Jim Toronto is here. Dave Schwann, Andy Mazur. You're just back from New York City, aren't you? For
your
500th Elton John concert.
Well,
that you went to?
It was 191 and 192.
Holy smokes.
But that was Tuesday and Wednesday at Madison Square Garden.
Now, are these exactly the same shows?
Yeah.
That you're seeing every single.
Well,
show
now
is
it
exactly
is. Now the farewell tour is. So every show, but in terms of the song list, yes, but in terms of his performance, it is not, and he adds little different little flourishes and different, and they have a big 12 minute jam that has been different every time I've seen the show, and it was kind of cool because this was one of the shows I saw was his 70th show at Madison Square Garden, his 70th sold out show. So that was kind of a milestone.
But he was performing here in Chicago at the United Center a couple of weeks ago.
No, that was at the Allstate Arena here.
Oh, at the Allstate recently?
He was in
previously
February.
Previously he was
at United Center in October. He was at the Allstate in February.
My question was, when he was in town, did he stay at your house?
Well, we really can't comment on that, Dean. Because people would be tearing my grass
trying
up.
To get souvenirs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was the cool thing though when I went to New York. So I'm sitting in the row, and I had pretty good seats, and I looked down the row, and there's Billie Jean King.
Huh.
And so the little side note of that is that she inspired the song Philadelphia Freedom.
Right.
She used to have a tennis team called the Philadelphia Freedoms, and they wrote a song, Philadelphia Freedom. And so it was really surreal because I was sitting right down the row from her.
Oh, that's cool.
And so there's Elton singing Philadelphia Freedom, and there's Billie Jean
right there
singing it. You know, and after the show, I just went up to her and said, thanks for Philly Freedom. And she looked at me and she smiled and said, you're
security.
Welcome.
Security.
And then the next night, in front of me, was Michael Stipe of REM.
Oh, wow.
And he was singing along to every song because he's about my age. And so we grew up at the same time. And I saw him as he walked out, and I said, I'd like to get the bootleg of you singing along to all those Elton songs throughout the last 2 hours, because it was pretty cool. But he was way into it. So it was fun. It always is.
Now, how many shows did you say? 190?
Yeah, 192. So hopefully...
192. And how many more do you plan to go to?
Well, I mean, my wife is kind of looking at me like, are we really going to do this 200 thing? I mean, haven't you seen enough? But how do I not do 200? Right? I mean, I'm this close. I'm eight away. How do I not do 200?
When you go to see these shows, you are generally front row.
Well, not front row, but
I've seen
close. Yeah, well, then because he has there's a point in the show where they let you go up to the stage.
Oh, so then
I sort of
push people out.
I use my
small children and women.
My
out
old
the way,
fullback so. Blocking days in high school
comes
football.
In handy.
Yeah.
So my point is that you have pretty good seats. For all of these shows.
Yeah.
What does a ticket set you back to go see, like, when you were at Madison Square Garden?
Like $200.
So you've spent $200 191 times.
Well, no, because when I first went going, the tickets weren't $200. They are now.
But lately, you are.
Well, yeah. Well, hey, the way I look
worth
at
it. That's, I mean,
I have never regretted any moment of that, because I look at it, and people always ask that question. It's a legitimate question. But at the same time, I say, do you go out to dinner on a weekend? Do you go to a bar and spend $500 on a weekend? Do you go to a hockey game or a basketball game? Or what do you do? Everybody has their obsessions.
Yep.
Do you have 500? Do you have Major League Baseball package for sports all year?
Right.
I don't.
Okay. Yeah.
You have football. You know, so
right.
Everybody has their obsession.
So that's your thing. I don't know if you know this about Dave Schwann. He's got a similar kind of passion.
What does he have?
He has gone. I think he's told me he's up to 475 Engelbert Humperdinck shows.
So I'll sing you to sleep after the lovin'.
With a song I brush back I the just head wrote yesterday.
Wow.
And I loved you so much.
I have no one to blame but myself for that.
You started it.
Don't bring up Engelbert. I can do an hour on Engelbert if you want.
So what's the story now with Elton John? When he completes this tour, that's going to be it?
He's going to continue.
You're part of the Elton John inside.
Well, I don't know about that, but he will continue to perform. He's just not going to do these big, long, multiple night or, you know, across the country tours. But I'm sure based on his health, too, when he gets done in 2021, he will be, almost 74. So I would think that if his health is okay, I think he would do residencies. Like he may do, you know, a week at the Chicago Theater or a week in Las Vegas, you know, every so often, as opposed to, he just doesn't want to do that.
Being on the road all the
big
time.
Kind of, but this is a big year, not only for the tour, but in May, on May 31st, he's got a movie coming out called Rocket Man about his life, much like
starring Taron Egerton.
Right, from the Kingsman
series,
movies.
Right.
And that's getting a lot of buzz because of the success of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Did you see the clips of Taron singing as Elton?
Yeah.
Both by himself and also recently.
With him.
There was a post-Oscars party. Elton has his Elton John AIDS Foundation. And they had a party at which Elton John and Taron Egerton, the actor who plays him in the movie, did...
Tiny Dancer.
Tiny Dancer together.
Yeah.
And Taron Egerton is a really great singer. He sounds just like Elton John.
Well, the soundtrack to the movie is going to be him. It's not going to be Elton John. Yeah, it's not going to be Elton songs. Yeah. And Elton is not...
Elton songs, but not Elton singing.
Singing, right. Yeah. It's going to be Taron singing. And in the film, they are not using Elton's voice at all. They are going to be using his own voice. And then news just came out. There's been rumors about this book, but in October, his autobiography is coming out. So this is a big year for...
a big Elton John
year. Yeah, definitely. So... Yeah, I just, and then...
You're going to be okay when this is all over?
I don't know.
Have you spent time at his house? You know.
No. I mean, what are you out of your mind?
Going through his closets.
Yeah. No, I have not been out, no. But I mean, I'm still reeling from the fact that when I went to Madison Square Garden earlier this week, if you go to a certain corner of the garden, you could still hear my name echoing from when he dedicated a song to me.
He gave you a shout-out.
Back in October.
On stage, yeah.
Yeah, in October, he dedicated a song to me, which was... Still, I not surprisingly, I have that on a CD in my car, and I play
your,
it.
It's your ringtone.
I play it every so often.
Your ringtone on the phone.
But it's just surreal because, I mean, I've been a fan of this guy since I was 9 years old. And to think that he would have recognized
that. He knows
that.
You. Yeah. He recognizes you and knows
and he does.
That's my question. Were you at his house?
No, I was not at his house. But plus what's been really a nice sideline of it is that through the years, I have met a lot of people that are fans like myself. And so I get to see them. Like I spent a couple of days with a friend of mine who lives in Boston, who I don't get to see very often, but he flew in for the shows. And so we got to spend some time. So it's been a nice little interesting
that's wild.
Little community, you know.
That's wild.
Yeah.
We'll take a quick break and wrap things up when we come back next. All right, that's going to wind it up for us today from our special broadcast from the American Lung Association's Fight for Air.
I know I'm sweating after that.
I want to thank everybody who came out, all of our special guests on the show today, and especially thank you, Andy Mazur.
Good to be here.
And having you here with us today, and Dave Schwann, always... nice to see you enjoying the
Thank
rainbow
you for
ice
the rainbow ice cream.
That was
indeed.
That was quite an experience watching him eat that, wasn't it?
He's quite the licker.
Wow.
All righty then.
And Elton Jim Toronto.
Of course.
Always delightful to
thank
have you
so
here
much,
with
Dean,
us today.
For putting up with me for 4 hours.
See, thank you, Steve Cochran, for coming by.
Right, he stayed a long
rare,
time.
Rare weekend appearance from Steve Cochran.
The heavy artillery came.
We will be with him Monday through Friday, as always, 8 to 8:30 here on WGN Radio, and, of course, on the WGN TV Morning News. Tomorrow morning, talking with Danny DeVito. Looking forward to bringing you that. This is where Steve Cochran celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 7:20 WGN.